My goal for the Successful Mind podcast is to continually provide you with amazing teachings and information that you can then use in your own life and business. For this reason, this year I'm going to be adding a very special show called What's the Truth? Each month, I'm going to select one person to be a guest on my show who would like help seeing what's really going on with a problem or challenge that they've been struggling with. My goal is to help this person uncover a hidden blind spot that's been keeping them from the success that they desire. If you'd like to be considered as a guest for this show, please text TRUTH to 469-447-7775. Again, text TRUTH to 469-447-7775.
Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast.
So it was a very interesting weekend. I didn't even know that, like, my favorite fighter was fighting. That'll show you how in touch with I am with everything that's going on out in the world. But I happened to be watching the news, and I saw that Conor McGregor was fighting. What was it, Saturday night? Saturday night. And so I got the pay-per-view of it. I actually would have won. I would have bought a ticket. Had I known early enough, I would have bought a ticket, and I'd have flown to Vegas to go see the fight. I really love Conor, what he stands for, and what he's done with his career. And so I wanted to see this fight, and I was talking to some people about the fight before he was fighting, because I don't really follow this stuff, right? But I do kind of watch what he's doing a little bit. But because he's been off for 15 months, nobody even told me, or I wasn't even aware that he had booked this fight. So he was fighting this guy, Cowboy, and this guy's got an outstanding record of, you know, knockouts, this Cowboy dude. Like, for everybody that's listening to this right now that knows what the hell is actually going on, you're going to love my lingo, because I don't know what the fuck's going on. But I do understand what's been going on with Conor and with his career, because I've been following it and watching it kind of closely. But I still didn't know that he was fighting, so that'll tell you how close I'm actually watching it. But anyway, so here's my rendition of this, because I actually think this is quite interesting. So McGregor has done for the UFC what Ali basically did for boxing. He's a larger-than-life personality, but he wasn't always a larger-than-life personality. He basically created this personality out of studying other larger-than-life personalities, incorporating that into his own authenticity of who he was and who he felt that he was, combined with an amazing skill set and a complete dedication to hard work to come out to be what is arguably one of the best fighters ever, best athletes ever. But what's interesting, though, is that Conor's a young guy. He's 31 right now. He's had a lot of very early major success. And then he started about a couple of years ago, he started to make a bit of a dark turn in his career, which I thought was very interesting to actually watch this start to play out. And it started with a couple of really bizarre actions on his part, throwing a two-wheeler or something through a glass door on a bus that one of his competitors was on. He punched some guy, or was accused of punching some guy in the face, is sitting at a bar that didn't buy his whiskey. And there were a couple of physical altercations that he got into, and he got in trouble and he was arrested. And he was going down it. He was going down a dark road, and he was getting some flack from Dana White, from the UFC, and a lot of commentators, and people were like, you know, this guy is, he's like a meteoric rise to fame and success, and a real picture of what a dedication and cultivation of his persona and everything that he stands for can be. And then just as fast, it looks like he's going to crash and burn and be the humiliation of what it can look like to allow success to eat you alive from the inside. And the reason that I'm talking about this on the podcast is from the perspective of something that I talk about quite a bit in the work that we do, which is this program that we do called Date with Your Dark Side. And basically what Date with Your Dark Side is it is it's a seminar that I do. It's a controlled seminar. It's one of our high-end seminars where a person, we actually walk a group of individuals down a road to confront what the dark side of their personality is before they find out what it is in a terrible way, like what was happening with Connor with these fights and these altercations that he was getting into. And here's the theory behind this. And it's not, I didn't come up with this theory. I think a combination of Freud and Jung came up with this theory back in the day. They called it the shadow side of our personality. And what it was is it's a mixture of the beliefs and the patterns and the roles that we take on in our childhood that may have allowed us to survive something that wasn't all that great, but it's never changed. And we take it into our adult life and it begins to consume us from the inside out, but we don't know that it's happening. And we start picking up negative patterns of behavior that are being triggered by external circumstances that we find ourselves in as we're moving through our life. And this could happen for somebody who's not traditionally successful, but it can also happen for people that are going after massive success in their life. We see it happen with rock stars all the time. We see it happen with movie stars. We see it happen with models, celebrities of all kinds, where they get involved in drugs and alcohol and, you know, all kinds of nefarious behavior that ends up either destroying them, taking them all the way down, and then they have to dig their way out and turn their career around, but they go through a real dark period first, or totally just destroying them altogether, and they either die or they overdose or they commit suicide or we never hear from them again. Like it can have real bad things. For the average person, this can look like divorce, losing their business, losing their house, losing your job, losing your kids. It can end up in suicide. It can end up in complete addiction. It can go down some really dark paths. But here's what I know about Connor, and one of the reasons why I admire him. I can't tell you I know how this happened because I don't know. I don't know the inner workings of actually what went on. But what I do know is that some people got into his life. One of them being was my first coach, Tony Robbins, who had a positive influence on Connor turning his mindset around. And I saw some videos and some articles about Connor talking about the idea that he realized that he was not going down the right road. And he was drinking quite a lot. He was sleeping in. He was still working out and showing up and doing all that stuff, but he was doing it kind of at his own convenience, almost more from an arrogant way and not really looking at certain things in his life that people were asking him to look at that he just wasn't really looking at. So he got a wake-up call before it got too bad. Thank God for him. And he started working with the right people to begin to turn it around, find out what was actually going on inside of himself, and really see, like, look, if I keep going down this road, everything that I've worked for, I'm going to lose. And he would probably end up losing his girlfriend. He would probably end up losing his kids. You know, the propensity there for alcoholism is there. Like the only reason I say that is because he was saying that he was drinking, you know, quite a lot. So that was becoming an outlet for him. That's not a very constructive outlet for any person to go down that road. You know, once in a while is one thing, you know, have a party or whatever, but when you're doing it on a regular basis, it can become quite dangerous. So he recognizes this. He starts surrounding himself with the right people. I know it just at some level, Tony Robbins got in his life. I don't know how extensive that was. I heard that Tony went to his house, did some work with him personally. He was there for the fight. He actually got to come out into the ring, into the octagon Saturday night. And it was interesting because the first person Connor hugged was Dee Devlin, his girlfriend. The second person he hugged was Tony Robbins. So that says quite a bit, I think, as to like, that was a thank you to Tony for whatever he did to help get his head right in the right place. And I've worked with Tony, so I know the amazing work that he does with individuals. And the reason that I wanted to talk about this was because I think it's a very good example of it doesn't matter how successful you become, the tendency to go off the rails is there for each and every one of us if we're really not careful. So I don't, you know, I know that Connor didn't, you know, he came from a part of Ireland where there wasn't much opportunity. You know, before he was fighting, he was a plumber. He was working 12 hours a day. He was raised in an environment that kind of defined who he was going to be before he defined it himself. And he pulled himself out of that. You know, he followed this desire. He found something that he was good at, which was, you know, ultimate fighting. He disciplined himself in the fighting arts. He started to become very proficient at the different arts and become very good at it. And he was studying other players and he was studying how to win. He started studying the greats and how to, you know, because there's more to this game than just the physical skill set. He'll be one of the first people to tell you that it's mostly psychological. Like, and Connor plays the psychological game better than anybody out there right now. I mean, he's probably surpassed Ali's ability to play the psychological game with the opponents. Part of beating the opponent is to psychologically get in their head. What we call shit talking is actually a strategy, and it's a very well-known strategy between sports teams. If you can get in the head of your opponent before you get in the ring or before you get on the field or before you get on the ice or whatever it is, you've got a much better chance of actually beating that person. And the thing is that psychology is in everything. His ability to get a psychological hold on himself when he saw himself going down a dark road is so very important to his success, because overcoming that, like, let me tell you this. I admire anybody that has the strength to look at their own dark side and be like, what the fuck? What the fuck am I doing with myself? And have the balls to fucking stand up to themselves and say, this needs to change, and then reach out and ask for help to figure out how to change it. There is so much pride that you take from doing something like that, because you have to overcome the deep shadows of shame and guilt inside of yourself, self-humiliation, maybe being humiliated by other people. I mean, we all know what the press does to drag people through the dirt the first time that they fuck up. You know, they're Connor's friend when he's winning, and when he's knocking guys out, they're all his friend. And the second that he does something, you'll watch so many of them turn on the guy, and maybe rightfully so. I'm not sit here going to argue the merits of whether that's good or bad. I don't condone what he did, but from the outside, and Brandon and I will talk about this a little bit, because he's very well versed in sports when I actually am not. I am a very, very part-time observer when it comes to these things. But I know the psychology behind it very well, because I've worked with a number of people over the years. So the one of the things that'll be interesting to hear from Brandon when we do inside the episode will be, you know, to what level does this psychology infiltrate the shit talking, and then the idea behind when the media gets involved, how much of it is staged versus how much of it is real? Brandon, he'll know the answer to that for sure. But it's something that I always wonder. Like when I first saw Connor like throw the two-wheeler through the bus window or whatever, and I was thinking to myself, is this a publicity stunt? Like, this is right up Connor's alley to cause this contention with this guy before he even fights him, you know, to get publicity and all this stuff. Like, all of that stuff does go on behind the scenes, but you never really know, is it real? Was it planned? Was it planned and then it went bad? Was it not supposed to happen that way? Like, what really went down? And then there was the guy that videotaped him, you know, punching the guy in the face at the bar or whatever, which that one you could pretty much tell definitely was not planned. And like I said, I'm not, you know, if it's not something that's planned or you know, like a publicity stunt, I'm really, I don't really, it's not that I don't condone the behavior, but I'm not here to judge it either way, because the idea, like when I see that kind of behavior from someone, I think to myself, what is that person going through in their life right now that they're that much a poor judge of their own character that they can't stop themselves from going that dark, down that dark of a path to be able to turn themselves around? And for a while there, I was really rooting for Connor. Like I really wanted him to see that he was going down a dark path. And I was like, I was actually kind of surprised. I thought he had his psychology together a little bit better than that. And again, like, I don't know what precipitated the turnaround, but I was really, really happy to find out that, that he began to turn it around. And I mean, he's been gone. We haven't seen him in the ring for like 15 months now. So he's been, he, to see him come out and take Cowboy out in 40 seconds was astounding to see where he upped his level of skill set to. He's also one of the very few professional people that you'll hear talk about the secret was fundamental in his mindset. And most of you know, like, I've been a critic of it. I was around that thing when it was being made. I was interviewed to be in it. At the time that it was being made, and there's been like the good, the bad, and the ugly with that damn movie and that book, because a big part of the manifesting process that is part of the process was completely left out of that movie, and it was left out of the book, which is what are the actions and the disciplines that you need to take in order to be able to do this, not just the visualization. But his sister, from what I understand anyway, gave him a copy of the book and the movie when he was like 15 years old. And he wasn't really interested in it at first. And then he started looking at it and he inherently saw the truth in it as far as the visualization. And he believed, you know, whatever I can visualize in my mind, I can create my life. So he started practicing that. And I've heard him talk about that several times, how he would practice visualizing getting the right parking space, or he would visualize certain things that were going to happen in his life. And The more he did it, the better he got at it. He was drawing a direct correlation to his ability to visualize and then manifest what it was that he wanted in his life. So then he started visualizing the outcomes of these events and fighting these individuals and exactly how it was going to go, punch for punch, kick for kick, you know, wrestling for wrestling, like every move. And it was working, and he was winning, and it was allowing him to up his game. And he would talk about it, and I know people would kind of criticize him for it. And I would think to myself, those people have no idea what this guy's doing. What he's doing is so far above and beyond what most people are doing, because he's playing to win at a completely different level. So that's, I want to bring that into this topic here. And like I said, I can't wait to get into do the inside the episode with BT, because he's just going to eat this shit up with me. He's going to eat me up and spit me out on this one, folks, because he's a champ at this. Like, every time I need to know something about sports, he's my go-to guy. I didn't even know what an undercard was when we were texting the night of the fight, and he says, well, who's on the undercard? I'm like, what the fuck is an undercard? I had to look it up, and then I'm like, oh shit, you're really dumb. You didn't even know what that was. So I'm getting there. So for all you sports fans, just bear with me on this. I'll get up to speed one of these days. But what I thought was really kind of neat about this was that when I saw him come out and fight this time, and I've seen all of his fights, Connor's, there was a different guy that showed up to this fight. Very, very different guy. The first thing that I noticed was that he didn't have as much of his bravado swagger when he was coming down the hall, when they were introducing him, and when he was moving from his locker room into the arena. I know that he had toned that down. Notice that he had toned it down a little bit. He toned it down at the weigh-in a little bit, and I thought, well, this is kind of interesting. It made me a little nervous, if I'm going to be completely honest, because I was like, is his confidence shaken, or is there something else going on here? But then I saw some of the other things that he was doing with Cowboy, and I thought, no, his confidence hasn't gone anywhere. But I didn't really grasp at that point to the level of what he did. He took it to a level so far beyond anything anybody would expected for the fight, because even though my understanding is that Vegas had the odds on McGregor for this fight, that privately a lot of people were going the Cowboy was going to whip his ass, or at least take him for the full three rounds, for the full 15 minutes. And that if you wore Connor down, because Connor has a weak spot somewhere about halfway through a full length fight, he loses his cardio a little bit. That's been traditional for him. That's where his opponent can grab the upper hand. It lasts for him for about 60 seconds traditionally, and then he gets his win back. But I know that he's been playing with that for years, trying to overcome that. And he's still, well, I don't know if he whooped it because he only fought 40 seconds for this fight. But last time he fought where he went the distance or a long time with an opponent, he still had the problem. And he openly admit that he was having this problem. But this time, this guy literally, and it was, I don't remember who I heard talking about this. It might've been Joe Rogan. That was saying that the people that he brought in to work with him, to train with him, he brought in some of the most elite fighters in the world. And he was literally studying from the aspect of how could he gain the upper hand on his opponent, no matter what the opponent did, no matter what hold the opponent had, no matter how the opponent attacked him, if he hit him, if he kicked him. Like basically, how could he overcome being in a down situation? And that's kind of what he did in this fight, because Connor came out with the first punch. He'd used that southpaw. He threw a massive left at Cowboy. Cowboy ducked. He completely missed the punch. There was no connect there whatsoever. And then they got locked up really quick. And Connor immediately came out. What won the fight was him taking this shoulder and jamming it into his face three times really hard, breaking his nose, swelling up his eye. The Cowboy's bleeding all over the place. And then he does a roundhouse to the side of the head, takes him down, comes up with that flying V knee, and then he pounds him into submission. It's over. It was like over in 40 seconds. It's done. But Rogan even admitted when he was commentating the fight that he had never seen that move before. He never saw somebody take him out with his collarbone, like three blasts right to the nose, breaks the guy's nose, shattered his nose. The Cowboy had to go to the hospital after the fight, my understanding, and takes this guy out. And it was, so then I'm doing a research after the fight's over because I was really impressed with what he did. And then find out to the extent that he's training. He's not just training. So think about this, and this would be with any sports team. We all know that teams study other teams, fighters study other fighters. But when you're studying them and when you're training, what are they really training for? Are they really training to completely destroy the guy out of the gate? Or are they training to match movement for movement? Are they training to figure out a way to go the distance with the guy, to find an opening, to get ahead, that type of thing? Connor was studying and training to dominate immediately out of the gate. How do I get this person in a position and literally destroy them? No foothold, not allowing the guy to get any traction whatsoever, and take him out as fast as he possibly can. And what I love about that mindset is that is the ultimate idea of playing to win and not coming from the place of playing not to lose. And I think that a problem with a lot of athletes, with a lot of business owners, with a lot of people in general, is that the strategy that they study to win is actually a strategy of how to play not to lose. It's not a strategy of how do I win? How do I dominate the situation, crush it so intensely that I beat the competition, I win, I go for the big payday, I go for the big win right away. Not because there's another aspect to this thing. He didn't just win. He didn't just dominate. He didn't just crush the opponent, but he left no cookie trails. He left none, meaning that there's nothing there for his next opponent to study to find out what he's learned in the last 15 months, other than that shoulder smash to the nose bridge to crush the guy's nose. We have no idea what Connor would have done had he grappled with this guy for any period of time and what he's learned and how far he's advanced in the next 15 months. So anybody that's studying him, that's going to fight him down the road, they have no idea what they're studying for. They don't know what he's learned. They don't know how far he's advanced in the last 15 months. They have no idea what they're getting in the ring with. All they know is what Connor's strong points were, you know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. That's all they know. And the part about that that's very dangerous is that they can get stuck in their thinking, well, Connor, you know, he was known for a long time as just the guy with the deadly left hook, the guy with the deadly left hand, the dangerous southpaw. That's what he was kind of known as. But the truth is that he's up the game so much in so many different levels. And my understanding is that he's up the game to like a catastrophic way of dominating the situation in all the places where he was once weak or falling behind, that anybody who gets in the ring with him, it's going to be extremely dangerous for them to fall into any kind of assumption as to what Connor is going to do. You're going to need a fighter that can get in there that's very fluid and is able to adapt to whatever he has the ability to throw at them. And then still, they're not going to have any idea what he's prepared to do in any given situation because there's nothing there to study. It's like a brand new fighter coming in the ring, but a guy that's got 10 years of experience, but there's nothing there to figure out what the hell he's going to do. So it's brilliant on his part. That keeps him on an edge, by the way, because there, like I said, there's nothing there for anybody to study. And he's also, he's taking his life, his whole life to a different edge. He's got his clothing line. He's got Proper 12, the whiskey that he's come out with. He is an unbelievable promoter and marketer. Like for all of you people out there that are, these are the kind of people that you want to study. Like you're not, I'm not saying go out there and be Connor, but you want to go out and be your version of Connor. Like where is the promoter, the marketer, the person that is very confident in your abilities to be able to take your own life and your own product and your own service and your own business to the next level? You can look at that as a model for yourself as to what he's done. The other thing that I always like to point out with these people, and I used to say it about rock stars and singers all the time, like when if you watch like a Celine Dion or you watch any kind of amazing musician or singer or you know that kind of performance, when they're really in it, giving their best, they don't always have the most gracious expression on their face. You know, it almost sometimes looks like they're in pain. But what the point that I'm trying to make is that they're willing to look foolish to be their best. And if you look at Connor, if you look at what he's turned himself into, he's willing to appear foolish to go beyond where people think he's foolish and they see him as a leader. There's a very fine line where people will ridicule you and be like, oh, that guy's a fool. Look how he's dressed. Look how he walks. Look at that ape walk that he stole from Vince McMahon and he made his own because that's where he got it from. He didn't even create it. He took it. McMahon first did that, from my understanding, in the WWE. And then Connor saw it, picked up on it. He exaggerated it and he made it a way of dominating and psychologically impairing the opponent. And people went from, oh, he's, look at him, he's a fool, to like, holy shit, this guy's the real deal. Everybody can do that in their business, but you have to be willing to get out of the idea of what other people think about you. And I think that's another extraordinary thing about Conor McGregor, is that he was willing to tackle these areas of his life that were not going well, where he was not being his best, and not really care what other people think. I mean, I'm sure he cares what Dee Devlin thinks and what his kids think, and then the people that are close to him. But I'm talking about the public in general, and really tackle these issues and come out and actually talk about how he did that, and that he's a better version of himself, and that he's going to go on to live his dream in the most magnificent way. If he continues down this road, he may become the most celebrated athlete in the world. And he's young, he's 31, like Christ, he's got his whole life ahead of him as to what he can do. And he's setting himself up for the big, big win long-term in his life. I hope I get to meet him and shake his hand someday. He's on one of my lists for being on the podcast. So we're working on that as we speak. It's going to happen. I'm visualizing it. So Connor, I'll meet you out in the visualizing field and we'll get you in here someday. But anyway, congrats to him. It was something I wanted to talk about. I was really excited to see it. I'm really, really happy for him and his life and what he's doing. And hopefully many more wins and success to him. So now we're going to go into, be ready, you're going to get inside the episode with the magnificent Brandon Tuss, and we're going to get his sports knowledge so I can find out how inferior I am on all my terminology. See you guys soon. Take care. Thanks for listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more,
go to davidnagel.com/freestuff.